The Sefer names through Parsha Frameshir for Parshas Pinchas. We'll look at the Sefer Bris Shalom by Rav Pinchas ben Rav Plita, who lived from 1620 to 1663. He passed away when he was only 43 years old. So the phrase Bris Shalom comes up in the Parsha, Parachav Hei Pasuk Yud Beis, where it says, Lachin Amor, Hineni Nosein Lo Es Brisi Shalom. Hashem says that because of the great act of Pinchas, the act of zealotry, he was rewarded with the covenant of peace. So Rav Pinchas, the son of Rav Plita, whose father was a rabbinical judge in Poznań, Poland, where the same place where a century later Rabbi Akiva Eiger would reside, he became a distinguished Torah scholar, passed away at the age of 43. He left behind many manuscripts, from which his son published the Sefer Bris Shalom in 1718. He was contemporary and was in correspondence with the Shach, Rav Shabti Cohen, who also lived from 1621 to 1662. The Kloisenberger Rebbe, Rav Kutu Yehuda Halberstam, who passed away in 1994, wrote a letter in 1983 when they were going to be reprinting and making a nice version of the Bris Shalom. Kloisenberger explains what Rav Pinchas means to the world of learning Torah. He notes that the Yismach Moshe often quotes the Bris Shalom. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in his commentary on Shas, quotes the Bris Shalom al Torah twice, once in Psachim and Daf Kuf Tesam Abiz, and once in Sota. The Rashash quotes the Bris Shalom often, and the Kloisenberger writes that it's important to reprint this Sefer to show the newer generation what kind of lions in Torah we had, who engrossed themselves in Torah all day, had Sat Yir Shamayim. But the truth is, we don't know much about Rav Pinchas, other than what the Gedolim of his time wrote in their Haskamos to his Sefer. Rav Avram Brevda, who was the Gadol Hador at the time, was responsible for seeing to it that the Sefer Bris Shalom was published, and his son writes in the Haskama that even though his father often stayed away from Drush Svarim his entire life, when it came to the Bris Shalom, he actually had the best Bachrim in his yeshiva help compile and print the Bris Shalom. So we'll quote three interesting limudim from the Sefer Bris Shalom al HaTorah. The first one is a vart that relates to Purim. So the Gemara Megillah on Daf Yud Gimel Mabiz makes a seemingly confusing statement. It notes that the pasuk in the Megillah tells us that Haman told Achashverosh he would give 10,000 shkalim to destroy the Jewish people. Says the Gemara, Hashem knew that Haman would offer shkalim to destroy the Jews, and therefore Hashem commanded that we give the machatz zashekel as a way of rectifying that. So the Bris Shalom wonders, what's going on here? Why does that make sense at all? Why would the fact that the Jews offered a machatz zashekel years earlier in any way relate or assist or rectify the fact that Haman offered to pay shkalim to kill the Jews? So the Bris Shalom answers based on a concept we have in Yoredeya. There's a general rule in Yoredeya that if an usser item falls into a kosher mixture, generally the kosher mixture will remain kosher if the kosher part is the majority. Something called batel berov, nullification based on the majority. That's on a Torah level. However, there are certain exceptions to that rule, where an item, even though it's in the minority of the mixture, will never be nullified. And one such exception is something called a davar sheba minyan, an item that is counted. A classic example is eggs. Since eggs are sold by the number, they're considered especially important. And therefore, if a non-kosher davar sheba minyan falls into a large kosher mixture, the entire mixture would become usser because the davar sheba minyan cannot be nullified. So based on this, the Bris Shalom says that's what's going on here with Haman and the machatz zashekel. Because Haman states his reason to Achashverosh as to why Achashverosh should agree to kill the Jews is because they are an am mefuzar umefurad bin ha'amim. They're a nation that's scattered and dispersed. He was essentially claiming that you Achashverosh have so many provinces, so many citizens, these Jews are batel berov. They're nullified. It won't matter if we wipe them out. He was committing to Achashverosh and saying, you think it's going to mean anything? They're nullified anyway. They're scattered. They're in the minority. And therefore, wiping them out won't really have any type of impact on your kingdom. However, the response to Haman's claim is the Machaz Zashekel. Hashem counted each and every Jew individually by number through the Machaz Zashekel. In that way, we as Jewish people become a Davar Sheba Minyan. We become something that's counted. And what the Gemara means is that if we view ourselves as never allowing ourselves to become batel, to become nullified, but rather each one of us is an important davar sheba minyan, we can negate the claims of Haman and all of our enemies who tried to kill us. An amazing insight of the Bris Shalom. A second limud. Very interesting. There's a Mishnah in Bechoros, Adav Hamid Beis, which says that if a tahar animal gives birth to a baby that looks like a tamei animal, you could still eat that animal. And if the tamei animal gives birth to a baby that looks like a tahor animal, the baby is usur to eat. So it's based on a rule that yotze min ha-tamei tamei, yotze min ha-tahor tahor. Whatever comes from something tamei is tamei. What comes from something tahor is tahor. So the Gemara in Bechoros and Dav Zayin has a little bit of a problem with this. Because bee honey, we know honey is kosher to eat, and yet a bee is not a kosher animal. So if we have a rule of yotze min ha-tamei tamei, whatever emerges from something tamei is tamei itself, then how is honey kosher? So the Gemara answers that since the bee eats nectar from plants, regurgitates it as honey, stores it in its body, but does not produce the honey from its own body, it's not considered yotze min ha-tamei. It's not produced by the bee. It's simply gathered and stored in the bee and then released. So the Bris Shalom in Parash Zacharimos explains that this is why Hashem had to take the Jews out of Egypt, since it was a land filled with impurity. So if that's the case, if it's a tamei land, we would say anything that comes from the land, call a yotze min ha-tamei, tamei. Anything that emerges from Mitzrayim should be tamei. So Hashem took the Jews to Eretz Yisrael, a land of purity. However, the problem with this is that the Psukim tell us that the non-Jewish nations defiled the land of Israel when they lived there. So what about the concept Hayotzei min ha-tahor tahor? Why did the pure land of Eretz Yisrael not have the power to purify these nations? So the Bris Shalom says, because we see by the bee honey that something can come from Tumah and still be Tahor. And logically, something could come from Tara and still be Tameh. Because the reason why bee honey is able to remain Tahor, even though it comes from something Tameh, is that it is not produced by the bee itself. And that's why the Pasuk says that the land of Eretz Yisrael regurgitates its inhabitants. Those other nations might live in Israel physically, but they're like the honey in a bee. They're merely being stored there. They're not connected to the land itself. And therefore, even if the land is Tahor, they could remain Tameh because they have no connection to the land. And he knows based on this, that's why Hashem had to take us out of Egypt. You might say, well, if we're not connected to Egypt, so can't we remain Tahor even in a Tameh land? So he says, well, the Torah refers to Israel as a land of milk, but also as a land of honey. Therefore, Israel has the koach of honey, that someone could be in Israel, but yet they're not connected. It's stored in the belly of the bee, if you will, and therefore the other nations could contain their own tumah, even in a land of Tara. However, the Torah refers to Egypt as a land of milk. When it comes to milk and a cow, whatever emerges from it will always have the exact same status of the milk, because the milk comes directly from the cow. It's not stored in the cow, it's part of the cow. And therefore, in Egypt, the rule was, whatever emerges from the impure land will always remain impure, which is why Hashem had to take us out of that land so that we didn't remain impure, because it was impossible for us to maintain and retain our tahara while in such a tamei land. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, we're so connected to the tahara of the land that it actually purifies us simply by being there, whereas the other nations are not connected to the land, and therefore they can remain tamei while being in a tahor land. And finally, a third limud from the Bris Shalom is that the Gemara in Brachos, Andaf Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, lists 10 attributes of a koshel bracha. And one of them is that it should be mole. It should be a full cup. When you're making a bracha on Kiddush, it should be full. So, Rav Yochanan notes that anyone who makes a bracha on a kos mali of a koshel bracha is given a nachala b'li mitzarim, is given an inheritance without boundaries, without borders, as the pasuk says in the bracha to Naftali, svar ratzon umali birkos Hashem. Svar ratzon, satiated, full, and umali birkos Hashem, and full of birkos Hashem. However, one could ask, what's really the deeper connection between Naftali, the Shevet Naftali, and a koshel bracha? So the Brish Shalom in Parshas Vezosa Bracha answers based on a Gemara in Chulin, on Daf Pei Zayin. The Gemara records that the monetary penalty for depriving someone of a bracha is 10 gold coins. And the Gemara proves this from a story. A heretic once came to Rebbe and attempted to disprove Hashem's existence. While Rebbe was fasting and davening that the heretic should be unsuccessful, another heretic came and informed Rebbe that the first heretic had killed himself. So Rebbe invited the second heretic to eat with him. And Rebbe offered this heretic 40 gold coins if he would decline to make the bracha on a kos for benching. Meaning you don't bench on the kos. But the heretic refused. So the Brish Shalom wonders, why did Rebbe make this offer? It was his house. He's the Baal HaBas. So can't he just bench on the cup himself? Why does he have to offer the guest money not to bench? It's his house. He can make the decision. It must be that the reward for delivering good news is receiving a koshel bracha. This second heretic had informed Rebbe that the first heretic who wanted to destroy him had died. And therefore Rebbe felt that this guest, this heretic, was owed a koshel bracha as his reward for delivering good news. Now we know that this is the bracha that Yaakov gave to Naftali. Naftali was the one who delivered to Yaakov the news that Yosef was still alive. And therefore the pasuk is saying that Naftali merited Malei Birkas Hashem. That because Naftali delivered good news to Yaakov, he was zoche to have a koshel bracha. A birkas Hashem refers to benching. So Naftali merited receiving a koshel bracha for the good news he delivered, and that explains why the Gemara in Brachos, when describing the fulfillment or the requirement of having a kos mole of a koshel bracha, quotes a pasuk from Naftali. And that explains a little bit, about who Rav Pinchas ben Rav Plita was, and several amazing insights from his sefer, Brish Shalom.